And now we're going to take a few minutes to talk about some pretty deep stuff. We as humans are constantly asking the big questions. Why are we here? What happens after we die? What do I believe and how is it different than what others believe? As part of that, we're often fascinated by faiths or religions that are on the fringes, ones that are harder for us to understand and accept.
I want that guru and his evil influence out of my city.
They're run by satanic power.
There is talk of vigilantes who may seek revenge on the Rajneeshis.
We're going to teach you how to prepare yourself. You are members of the next level.
The next level.
Those were clips from the documentary series Wild Wild Country about the Rajneeshi group in Oregon in the 80s and the podcast Heaven's Gate, which talks about the group known for committing mass suicide in the 90s. Both of these are stories that have become important parts of American pop culture, and a huge reason for that is because it's hard for many of us to understand these groups, which are often referred to as cults. To help us better understand some of this, I spoke with Ben Zeller. He's chair of the Department of Religion at Lake Forest College in the Chicago area and is the author of the book Heaven's Gate, America's UFO Religion. He was featured prominently as the go-to expert on Heaven's Gate in the podcast. I started by asking him what his reaction is when people characterize faith groups as fringe religions or cults.
So my first thought is to be wary, because cult is one of those words which we can use to shut down our rational thinking. Because, of course, no one wants to say they're part of a cult. I've yet to meet someone who says, I belong to a cult. So a cult is almost by definition someone else's religious or spiritual or cultural identity that we don't like or don't agree with. That's not to say that all of those are good. It's just that when I hear the word, I'm immediately wary, because it means that we are already judging whatever this group is to be either something dangerous or maybe just unlikable. Now, that may be the truth. They might be a dangerous group. Maybe we don't like them. But initially, I try to take a step back and think, okay, what is it about this group that we don't like? What is it about this group that might be dangerous?
And how important is it that we do try to understand that people of faiths can believe something differently than we do and actually believe it when we say that?
I think it's really tough to do that because religion reaches into the heart of who we are. It's one thing to say, well, I like this flavor of ice cream, you like that flavor of ice cream. Because ice cream, well, it's tasty, is ultimately relatively meaningless in the nature of things. Whereas religion is not. Religion gets at the heart of our identities. Religion gets at the heart of our most cherished traditions, of our beliefs about the meaning of life and what happens after life. And to say someone has a radically different position on that from what I hold, that can be really threatening. And when it's a large number of people who've been around for a long time who are that way, we can sort of shrug and say, okay, well, I accept the fact that there are Jews and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists. When it is a small number of people or a recently emergent group, then I think we're less likely to take a charitable approach and say, well, I'll accept that that's just a different way of being. I think we look at it more and think, huh, that's weird.
What can be characterized as weird? From the standpoint that there would be some who would say, well, if we think about the origins of Christianity, that story in and of itself sounds weird. And others try to say, well, it's more of a parable. And yet, where do we come down on that? Is that just because it has lasted so many years and other religions have as well? Is there almost like a test of time to some of these things?
I think there is a test of time. Ultimately, it has to do with what we're culturally conditioned to think of as normal. If you were to travel around the world and ask people what is normal, you're going to get radically different answers. And I don't think that means that there isn't a normal. I just think it means that we can't agree on what normal is and that normal changes depending on who you're asking. But Christianity is a great example. I mean, so I often, when I'm teaching and we come across a religious group which looks like it's making very strange claims, and I teach on UFO religion sometimes. So a group like Heaven's Gate, which was the UFO religion with the mass suicides in 1997, my students read this and think this sounds bizarre. And I say, okay, well, maybe it is bizarre, but let's think about it. Some people in this classroom, some of the listeners right now, have fundamental beliefs about the creator of the entire universe, not just our planet, but the entire universe, taking physical form and walking around in the dirt and the sand and sitting down and eating with people in some little corner of the Roman Empire a couple thousand years ago. And if you're a believer, if you're a Christian believer, that makes sense. If you're not, that sounds ludicrous. And that's what gets to the heart of my attempt to at least begin with the charitable or empathetic approach to studying what people believe. I'm not saying all beliefs are good. I'm not saying all beliefs are likable. I'm just saying I want to start with, and I think we should start with the charitable reading.
What about Heaven's Gate piqued your interest to this point? And were you able to go in to Heaven's Gate with that same attitude of being as open-minded as you wanted to be?
I was. So my story of how I got into the study of Heaven's Gate starts in the classroom. I was an undergraduate student, and the exits, as members called it, or suicides, as those of us outside of the group call it, happened in 1997 when I was a college student, and I was studying religion. I was studying what we would call the mainstream religions. I'd taken courses on Hinduism, Confucianism, Christianity, Judaism. And I wanted to use those tools that I used to study the world's religions to understand this group. And to me, that was essential to be able to understand it, was to be able to compare it to other groups and to see why is it that this made sense to members. And when I look around today at other new or alternative religions, I try to do the same thing. I try to use the same tools we can use in the study of other religions to see if I can make sense of these new religions. In my study of Heaven's Gate, what I saw were people who really believed. And the leaders and founders of that group, I believe, from the evidence I found from their writings, believed it. And they were not living any differently than the members of the group. And in fact, the co-founder who survived to the end died with the rest of them. I think that's an example where, although those of us on the outside looked at it and thought, this is dreadful, it was not the case of a charlatan taking advantage of people so much as a group wherein internally it made sense to them.
I'm also curious about the concept of the afterlife when it comes to what certain religions mm-hmm. believe. But let's say with Heaven's Gate situation, you mm-hmm. have people who committed mass suicide, and you have other religions where people think that, well, this is just sort of the warm-up act for what the rest of my existence is going to be. It's going to be so much better in whatever is next for me, depending on how strong I was in my faith. What do you make of that in terms of we as humans living on this earth and how much that impacts how we feel about our faith while we're here, and also how we treat our own religion and people of other religions?
Yeah, beliefs in the afterlife can have such a powerful effect on how a person chooses to live or, in those cases, end their lives. From a logical perspective, if you really do believe that this life is a warm-up act to the next and that this life is a tiny little blip compared to the eternity of the hereafter, then I suppose it makes sense to emphasize so much what's going to come after and de-emphasize this one. Now, historically, we don't tend to see that with most religions. We don't tend to see the teaching being, well, you might as well sort of off yourself because there's no point to it. Rather, we see this brought up at times when there is suffering, when there is death, as a way to comfort those who are going through it. You know, this is the idea of religion as theodicy, as sort of an explanation for the suffering. That we may suffer here in this short little life on earth, but that there's something better to come. It is at its heart, though, from a purely logical perspective, a very dangerous teaching, because it does imply that what you do here in this life, from a purely pragmatic level, only matters if it influences what's going to happen thereafter. And I freely admit, as someone who studies religion, that is a dangerous position.
Ben Zeller is chair of the Department of Religion at Lake Forest College in the Chicago suburbs. He's also the author of many books, including Heaven's Gate, America's UFO Religion. Ben, a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.